Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I find it interesting, this report that just came out that said that Donald Trump and the Republican Party, they've had to return almost $13 million in the first half of this year because of deceptive repeating donation tactics. Where if you gave once, they just keep banging you month after month after month. And it turns out that those refunds are the biggest outlays that the Trump folks have made in 2021. And they're accumulating a massive, last I saw, $100 million war chest. I'm not sure what they're going to do with that other than maybe line their pockets here and there. The grift that we saw the last 4 years. But I got to tell you, I'm starting to have a little bit of hope. I know I said at the beginning of the year Trump was never going to be charged. He was never going to see the inside of a courtroom and never going to go to jail. I don't know now. When you had over the weekend, you had the ex-acting attorney general, Jeffrey Rosen, who testified for 7 hours before the Senate Judiciary Committee. I don't know now. And here to share some thoughts on maybe what we do know and what we can figure out, I've asked our good friend Justin Hendricks to come back and talk with us. Justin is the editor of Tech Policy Press. He's also one of the folks who's doing some of the work on the Just Security Clearinghouse. Justin, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
So I got to be honest. I said at the beginning of the year, there's no way that we're going to do anything to Donald Trump. It's not who we are. Didn't do anything to Reagan over Iran-Contra. Didn't do anything to W. Bush over the getting us into a couple of wars. It's not what we do in this country. But I got to be honest, 7-hour testimony, some of the stuff coming out, I'm now a little less certain of never.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like this testimony on Saturday was critically important. And a number of the politicians who were there or who are close to that investigation really seem to suggest that it was, you know, points to some really concerning things. You had Richard Blumenthal saying that he was struck by how close the country came to total catastrophe. And then I think, you know, Representative Jamie Raskin, who, of course, led the second impeachment trial as the House manager, also said that particular interview may and well shape the January 6th Select Committee's investigation. It will certainly inform it.
Yeah, because, you know, I'll be honest, you know, we had followed the last 4 years of all of the things and all the leaks and all the stories that were coming out and all of the things that people were saying, no, it couldn't possibly be true, only to find out, yeah, that stuff's all true. I'm looking at this guy as a former acting attorney general who has jumped out, and he wasn't, as I understand, wasn't subpoenaed, wasn't compelled to testify. He came in before everyone else. So I guess the first place to start would be, why would he come in without being compelled?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like to some extent he wanted to get in before there was a legal challenge to his potential testimony. And you know, he's of course called by the Senate Judiciary Committee and showed up and did 7 hours, as you mentioned, of testimony on Saturday. Jeffrey Rosen, who you know was the acting attorney general, he is an absolutely central witness in multiple now investigations into what Trump got up to in those final days in the White House. Everything from the question over the pressure campaign on Georgia, and the effort to kind of try to interfere in the decisions that Georgia election officials were taking, on through, of course, to the run-up to January 6th and what was going on there. And what we now know was a campaign to try to use the Department of Justice to essentially interfere in the outcome of the election. And that is that potential total catastrophe that Richard Blumenthal is referring to.
Yeah, we saw the statement last week. The guy scribbled down the note, just come out and say something. We'll take it from there. That's something that history is going to remember for generations, because this was really, that's in my view, an admission of this is an ongoing coup. This is an ongoing attempt to usurp the power of the ballot box and the will of the people. It's just,
yeah.
I don't know how else you take that.
Yeah, and you look at folks like Joyce Vance, legal analyst, who said, you know, that it really does speak to Trump's state of mind. Jamie Raskin said something very similar in an interview with Greg Sargent at The Washington Post today, that it really gets to, you know, his motivation, what he was trying to do. And, you know, again, you have to go back and look at the timeline, look at what was going on. December 21st, Trump has a meeting at the White House. He's got multiple Republican congressmen and women who are there. They're talking about how to, you know, reject the certification of the Electoral College. They're beginning to plan for January 6th. So you've got folks in the room like Jim Jordan, Mo Brooks, Andy Biggs, Paul Gosar, Marjorie Taylor Greene. And then you've got this phone call just 6 days later, right after Christmas, where Trump urges Rosen to take action, you know, saying people are angry, they're blaming the Justice Department for failing to respond. And then, you know, we know that right around that time is when Trump threatens Rosen. He says, you know, I'm going to replace you and potentially install Clark, right? And then we get that draft letter that that Clark sends to Rosen, potentially to interfere in the Georgia election. And that's when things really do, you know, hit the fan.
Right. But, you know, this is something I've been saying was in the works, I believe, for at least a year before. And honestly, from, you know, 2015, it was always their intent to contest the outcome of the election. They were talking about this in 2015 and in 2016, that the only way they could possibly lose if it was stolen. And I believe they were building the kind of infrastructure to do some of these things that they inevitably did in 2020. And I got to think you have to look at all of it in its entirety, which is why I think there has to be a full, open and transparent investigation into this.
Well, and let's hope that that's what this January 6th committee will become, because you've got to take into account not only all of this activity, but as you say, a set of activities that the campaign and the president engaged in. I look back to March 2020 when the campaign launched this idea of an army for Trump, these poll watchers. That would come along and essentially keep an eye on what was going on across the country. What were they trained to do? A lot of folks on the left were worried that they were going to come and try to intimidate others. And of course, that was a real concern. But one of the things that they were explicitly trained to do was to show up with their smartphones and to try to collect evidence of any kind of impropriety that they might see at the polls. Of course, you know, we know through multiple investigations over, you know, 60 cases rejected, that there was no widespread fraud, not even any significant fraud across the country in 2020. But nevertheless, you had these individuals out there on behalf of the Trump campaign looking for little artifacts, creating little local media stories that spun into social media, that got gathered by the White House, turned into a narrative, and then essentially fed into the big lie.
See, now you take that as the day that you were most concerned. For me, it goes a little bit earlier than that. Back to January 20th of 2020, when in Richmond they had that, what was like supposedly a lobby day, where they all showed up in their dress gear, all in uniform. I said back then that was an exercise. That was a show of force. That was one of those, look what we can do and be afraid of what we're doing, all while he's out there, saying, you know, don't let them take your Second Amendment, you know, kind of riling them up. But for me, that was just a show of force thing more than it was a lobby day when evidently virtually nobody was there.
Well, 100%. I mean, you've got these two things kind of happening side by side. One is that these, you know, right wing extremists armed to the teeth, allowed to show their head, not just in Richmond, but across the country in multiple demonstrations throughout 2020 with no repercussions. Look at Oregon. Look at the various kind of actions that took place across the country where there was violence and no seeming repercussions for these individuals. No doubt then, of course, that come January 6th, folks like the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys, the Three Percenters, et cetera, feel perfectly empowered to show up to the rally at the Ellipse and then to march on the Capitol. And I don't know, what worries me, Rick, right now is that we're seeing some of these groups act in public again. We've just seen the Proud Boys this weekend you know, engage in violence? And where are the repercussions?
No, I'm right there with you. And it's one of those things that's quite scary, because there haven't been. And again, I go back to what my fear of the time was, that we're just not going to hold anybody accountable. And, you know, Trump and the people who pulled this off, they're going to walk away with it.
Well, you know, this latest interview with Rosen, and of course, the ongoing January 6th Select Committee, really does point to the possibility that the political leaders who were behind January 6th, behind this campaign, the big lie, could in fact be brought to account in some way. And of course, there's also the possibility that those other cases that are out there in Georgia and elsewhere may in fact result in real damages, in real accountability for the president and for some of the people that worked for him on this. So we'll just have to see. But you know, as you mentioned earlier, unfortunately, we've been down this road before. You and I have talked about some pretty serious things on this show in the past, and unfortunately, there has not been accountability.
No, and this is my problem. My problem with, you know, everybody got all worked up. Mueller's coming. You know, Mueller's going to do his job, and Mueller's going to get him out, and nothing. The same thing has happened. You know, when Biden's going to come in, we're gonna hold them accountable. We just the impeachments are coming. We're going to hold them. It never happens, and I don't want to get people's hopes up and think, hey, this is finally something's going to be held accountable. But this is starting to look like some people are coming forward. I'd love to see what was in that 7-hour testimony. Do we ever get a look at what was said?
Not yet. So all we have so far are the comments from lawmakers who were there. And I do look to folks like Jamie Raskin, who's, you know, commented in particular about the extent to which the committee will want to understand all of the efforts that Trump took to manipulate the Department of Justice. That's going to play out again and again, I think, in different hearings that the Select Committee hosts. So there'll be more, and it will be in the public.
Do you think there's a possibility, and this is one of those, I know it's kind of a fool's errand to try and bring this up, but is there a possibility that even his supporters look at this stuff and go, that's not what I signed up for? I voted for this guy because I thought he was the best guy. I thought he was going to fight for us. I didn't vote for someone who was going to overthrow our government. I didn't vote for somebody who was going to do this kind of stuff. Do you think it's possible that there will be people who will go, this isn't what I signed up for?
You know, there's a lot of opinion polling out there that's taken place since January 6th. I just saw some new survey work from the Chicago Project on violence that came out over the weekend from a researcher called Robert Pate that suggests that, you know, there really are two universes. There's the MAGA cinematic universe and there is, you know, reality. And unfortunately, there are a large number of Americans who believe that what took place, for instance, on January 6th was justified because Biden is an illegitimate president, because the election was stolen. And I don't know the extent to which, you know, any of this effort, the committee or any of these other investigations in Congress or other investigations outside of Congress, I don't know if it can bridge that divide. I don't know exactly what will do that. But I do know that it matters that we get to the bottom of it. If we have any hope of kind of holding the nation together on some level, there has to be fact. There has to be, you know, a reality, and there has to be a rule of law. And so, you know, despite the fact that there are a lot of people out there that will reject the reality of that day and will buy the president's alternative narrative about what happened, you know, we've got to push for the truth.
Now, the fact that he's got this $100 million war chest that they're building, and look, he's still got, you know, power in social media, and, you know, the right wing of this country has an enormous megaphone with cable news and talk radio. They will continue to keep perpetuating the big lie and the big steal, even though there are Republican legislators who are coming out and saying there's no there. At some point, don't they have to be held accountable too? I mean, it's one thing to go after Trump, but it's another thing to have to go after the billionaires who funded all of this stuff and the people who helped push these lies through our media and, you know, through our entire political apparatus.
You know, I agree with you that the political elites, the media elites that fed these lies absolutely need to be held to account. But you know, this is a participatory activity. This is not something that's only elite driven. You've got a lot of folks in their homes across the country who deeply believe in Donald Trump. They deeply believe in the Republican leaders that are around him, and they aren't simply going to change their minds just because they're even told to by a potential elite, you know, changing their tune.
Yeah.
So I'm not exactly sure how to cross that bridge.
Now, you're somebody who follows this extremely closely. You know, we had the testimony of the police officers last week. We had you know, this testimony by Rosen. What are we expecting coming next? Personally, I would have liked to have seen Rosen's testimony be public, but I'm sure there's a lot of national security stuff that we probably not allowed to know just yet. What are we expecting? What are you paying attention to? What shoes are you looking to drop next?
So I think one of the things to keep an eye on is, you know, when does the select committee plan its next hearings? And it's not exactly clear, you know, exactly when that's going to happen and what the subject of that first set of hearings is going to be. You know, it is interesting that we know they're trying to decide what types of evidence, what types of witnesses to call at the moment. I saw a note earlier yesterday that said that the committee's weighing whether to pursue call logs from the Trump White House, for instance. There are probably going to be some legal fights over what they can get, but it looks like the Biden administration intends to, you know, be cooperative, which is lucky. On some level, the executive branch doesn't plan to put up too many roadblocks to getting at White House, you know, records and documents. We can hope that that's the case. So I would look for, when is that next hearing? What's it about? And how is it going to follow on to what we learned in that first hearing, which I think really set the tune for why is this important? Why does this matter? And underscored the fact that it was not a walk in the park. It was not a set of tourists visiting the Capitol. It was an absolutely bloody, violent insurrection with the intent of overthrowing the Electoral College certification on that day and denying American democracy.
And it was planned from the beginning. This wasn't something that just spontaneously happened. I've had people who said that they were there and it was just a spontaneous thing that happened. I'm going, no. You don't have all the infrastructure that they had in place for something that was just spontaneous. But most certainly something we're going to keep an eye on. Justin, I appreciate the time. I appreciate your expertise on this, and I hope you'll come back and keep us up to date on what's going on.
Thank you, Rick.
As always, good stuff, Justin Hendricks. Make sure you check out the work that he's doing over at Tech Policy Press. You can check out the website, techpolicy.press. We'll get links out on social media. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.